This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. So Patricia in New York, let's get back on track together. You had asked me about, you were telling me that you know people who are making more money from the government and not working. And you raised an interesting question. You said, is that moral? And we were starting to talk about that. We ran out of time. So anything further you want to add to that kind of reset before we start discussing?
Well, I just want to point it because my sister is a single mother, mother of two children, and she pays her mortgage and taxes. And it upsets me because she works so hard to do not get help from the government and, you know, try to be completely, you know, fair and honest to the government. And it really upsets me when I see people that they're lying to get money from the government. Now, their excuse was that if they don't do that, you know, the government is going to use the money for something else anyways. So I don't know if that's really morally right. I mean, it's really upsetting to see people lying to get an easy way to leave.
Well, lying, sure. I mean, I would oppose that. But there's another dimension to this that we should at least keep in mind, and that is that, and this is not necessarily that true for a young person who hasn't been in the workforce very long, but let's say you or me, someone who's maybe been in the workforce for years, we've paid taxes into the system. And so one way to look at this, it's not the only way, but one way would be to see that this money that you receive is actually yours and you're getting it back. And the taxes that you paid that went to underwrite some of these programs are now benefiting you. It just so happens. But it's not the government's money you're getting. It's your money that you're getting because you've paid into the system. So I think that has a mitigating effect on whether or not this is right or wrong, especially somebody who's been working for a long time and has not necessarily seen much by way of benefit. And then now they can benefit this way. I don't think that's necessarily bad. Now, it may be bad for them to not be working. And this reminds me of a Bible passage, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. St. Paul says, "For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat." So St. Paul was pretty hardcore. I mean, no slackers, no lazy loafers who are just sitting around doing nothing and then expecting to get their three hots and a cot. His policy was, if you're not willing to work, then you don't eat. Now, in this case, the government steps in and says, look, here's your free corn dog and your free government cheese or whatever. So it's not as though the person's going to go hungry. But that principle of work and how it ennobles us to do work, to experience our human potential by doing work and creating and ordering things. I'm reminded also of how when God created Adam, and the very first thing he does to Adam is he gives him a job. Okay, here are all the animals, and your job is to name them all. So he put Adam to work. Adam had the benefit of the Garden of Eden. He could kick back and enjoy, but it wasn't living up to his full potential if he didn't also work. So God gave him a job. So those are other factors, I think, that enter into the conversation. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, seeing it that way, I think that it's more important to let them understand the importance of being useful and to work, and that's something that I pointed when we were talking about that. Now, I just guess it's just so hard for me to see how people get this style of living, you know, to be so lazy, and because that was the whole thing. They were saying that they have time to watch TV and to do things that they always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And when I see myself and I see family members that we all work so hard, I guess that's when I get upset.
Yeah.
Because we try to be responsible. We try to, you know, pay our taxes, do our jobs and be useful. That when I see this kind of attitude, it upsets me.
Yeah. There's a word for this, or there's a word for what this can become, and the word is effete. Effete. E is the word of the day, everybody. E-F-F-E-T-E, effete. And it means to be lacking in vigor, to be degenerate, to be decadent, to be exhausted, no energy, worn out, unable to produce, sterile, as they say in Canada. So the danger I see of people getting accustomed to just parking themselves on the couch and playing Xbox all day and not working, not exerting themselves, is they become effete. Now, when enough people in a given society become effete, then the society becomes effete. And this is why we see the kind of degeneration that over history we've seen. I mean, it's a handy example to go back to the Roman Empire and to see how effete the people had become with the bread and circuses. They were, in essence, being bought off by the government so that they wouldn't riot or there would not be unrest. So they were given all the freebies as a way to keep them complacent. And that led to the eventual sort of implosion of the Roman Empire because it no longer really had that work ethic that made it the empire that it once was. I mean, now that's an oversimplification of a much more complex scenario, but that was part of it. And I would hate to see that happen here in these United States, obviously.
Yeah, I think that you're making a really good point. And I was talking with my grandpa a few weeks ago about that. He said that his generation, he sees that this generation is getting lazier. People, yeah, they want to do less and get more. And he sees the danger on that.
Yep. And I bet he has the perspective coming from a different generation to see that. I'll leave it at this, Patricia. I don't know how old you are, but my mom and dad grew up during World War II. They were kids in World War II. Their parents were growing up in the Depression and were young adults at the time of the Depression. And I can still remember my grandparents, primarily on my mother's side, who were extremely thrifty in ways that I didn't see, even in my own parents, who themselves were thrifty, but nothing went to waste. And it was striking to me as a kid, because by then, you know, in the 60s, it was already the fast food generation and disposable styrofoam cups and big disposable pens, and all the whole disposable culture had come into existence in my childhood. And I saw these old people, my grandparents, who did not live that way. And it made an impression upon me, and I think it was their generation having lived through the privations of the Great Depression, not to mention going into World War II, where they were rationing everything. I remember seeing my mom's ration card when she was like 3-4 years old, and everybody in the U.S. was getting a ration card that said how much coffee or sugar or other things you were allowed to have, and it was allotted to people, and when you didn't have any more, you didn't have any more. And it just was so foreign to me to imagine living in a time and place when you just couldn't go to the mini market and grab what you wanted off the shelf. Those days are gone, but I mean, there was some value in that, if you ask me. Patricia, I appreciate your phone call. Thank you. This is a fascinating topic, worthy of a great deal more consideration. Let's go to Mark now in Phoenix. Hello, Mark. Welcome.
Hello, Patrick. First time caller, long time listener.
Well, welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you. So I wanted to touch base a little bit on your prediction for the future about these jobs going away. So I'm in the high-tech industry. I've been in there about 30 years now.
Okay.
And in America, obviously, the manufacturing has gone away, but you know, there's still some manufacturing. And what I'm seeing these days is before it was on a quarterly basis, one customer would ask about automation, and I'm down to maybe daily. Customers of mine are asking, what can I do to automate my process? Does their equipment come with automation? Do you know anyone that wants a job? And this is throughout the U.S. I support the entire U.S. Market. And we see that not only that are we entering this in a fourth industrial period that started about 10 years ago with automation that started, let's say, in the late 20th century, that they're starting to take advantage of AI. And people think, well, a robot can't handle, can't think, can't do what I can do. Well, I have some insider information, but I see these end users that are actually taking like a burger shop for example, is actually able to take AI and analyze each order by date, time, and second, and determine how many French fries they need to make, how many burgers they need to make. So the fact that a robot cannot think, we at first thought maybe this is they can't replace me, excuse me. But at the same time, when you use AI, the robot can start to learn. So these people that think that, you know, I'm going to take it easy, there'll be a job for me in the future, there's either going to be no jobs for anyone, or the robot's just going to take over. And we see this quite a bit, and they're good.
When Skynet becomes self-aware, then the robots take over, right?
Exactly. So it's not something that's in the future. It's fairly close, and it may not be robots walking around everywhere, but they are going to take over as far as these jobs that are repetitive. And maybe dangerous jobs that we see drones are taking over, you know, doing analysis of the lines and, you know, things that they can get away with by not having to send a person there. So it's true. It's happening. And we see it all the time. And, you know, I feel bad for those people that are, you know, in those markets that, you know, may not have a job. And I've encouraged both of my kids in college now to switch, look at switching majors, you know, look into programming robots, own a robot company, you know, maybe something like that. So it's definitely happening.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I agree with you, Mark. Thank you, sir. Yeah, thank you. First time caller.
I think you did well. What the problem is just as well as I do.
I do. I do indeed. Now, Cyrus, I haven't heard anything yet about radio show producers being replaced by robots.
No, they're but working again, on the hosts first.
I don't think so. I think the host will rise up.
Yeah.
Consider me the John Connor of radio hosts.
Oh, that's good. I like all these drops.
Going up against the Skynet.
Skynet,
see?
John Connor. This is good.
I try hard. So Jan Marie asks me on Twitter. She says, Patrick, why doesn't the government just supplement income rather than just allow people to sit at home and do nothing for dollars, half paid by employer and supplemented from the government? Well, I can see benefit there. I could see... I can see value there, because then you have people who are actually working, which is good for them in any case. It also helps the companies that they work for, and yet the government can still give them some money by way of a supplement. I think, you know, and this is the cynic in me, Jan Marie, and that is that I think that there's more to it than just wanting to help people. When a government, take for example, I don't know. I'm just going to throw a dart. How about Gavin Newsom, who just so happens to be facing a recall election because so many of the kind citizens of the great state of California do not like him and feel that they have been burned by this guy because he is, in many ways, at least in their view, has mismanaged the state and mismanaged things like COVID, and they're sick of it. And all of a sudden, all these like free things are coming. Hey, we're going to pay for this and we're going to pay for that and we're going to pay off your school tuition. I mean, that to me smacks of pandering. Now, you may say, oh, come on, he's just trying to help people. Okay. Doesn't look that way to me, though. So when the federal government is trying to help people, and I'm all in favor of helping people, let's help people. Okay. But if it comes with, I don't know, kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of thing. And hey, don't forget, when you get to the polls, I gave you all that free money. And if you'd like some more of that, be sure, you know who to vote for kind of thing. I mean, I think that must enter into it as well. So I'm not so sure, Jan Marie. I really don't know to what extent it would be a motivator to get people up off the couch and off of the Xbox and go back to work. If they had to work and the government was giving a little extra money, I mean, maybe that would be an incentive. I'm not sure. And the question also came up on Twitter. Where did it go? I was here just a second ago about how do we, I wish I could find it. It was here a minute ago, but how do we prepare for a life, maybe potential situation where there is a lot more automation and fewer jobs? Well, the caller we had just a minute ago, Mark, he was talking about maybe start looking at those fields where you're safer from being replaced by robots. Interesting article here from CNBC. Automation is threatening 25% of jobs in the U.S. Now, this article came out in 2019, the beginning of the year 2019. So we're now 3 years beyond this point. And, of course, COVID was nowhere even on the horizon at this point. And Jimmy John's was still open on weekends when this article was written. But even then, they're saying automation threatens 25% of the jobs in the U.S., especially the boring and repetitive ones. Radio show producers, is that right up there at the top? No, it's not.
Nope.
It's not, because it's not boring and repetitive, at least not this radio show, Cyrus. Am I right?
I hope you're right. I guess the listeners will let us know.
But I know I'm right.
I'm seeing this too. I remember hearing years ago that truck drivers, and we have so many great truck drivers that listen to the show and call in, but their jobs might be in danger. And I was like, well, when did I hear this? So I just did a quick Google, truck driver automation, and the first thing mm-hmm. that pops up, truck drivers may be replaced by automated technology as early as 2027. According to the researchers, artificial intelligence could be maneuvering trucks on the road within the next decade. And according mm-hmm. to the Los Angeles Times, 1.7 million American truckers could be replaced by self-driving trucks over the next decade.
And how many million is that?
1.7.
So imagine 1.7 or some large percentage of that. 1.7 million truck drivers losing their jobs. I mean, then I guess you want to be a robot mechanic at that point, right? And work on fixing robots. There'd probably be a call for that.
And it's truck drivers do so much more than just drive trucks too. But I mean, the truck driving part of their job could be.
What
replaced.
Else do they do besides driving trucks? That's new to me.
Oh, they load and unload. Export, import?
Some do.
Yeah. It's not an easy job.
What happens when you have 1.7 million truck drivers out of work looking for a job as a radio producer? What do you do then?
Why do you keep bringing that up?
I know. One quick aside, but then we'll continue with the phone calls. A couple of my sons have tried their hand working at the local Amazon distribution center, these massive cavernous buildings. And if you you can pull it up on the YouTubes, but you'll see that these Amazon distribution centers are populated largely by robots who are stacking and moving and sorting, and so the human beings in these centers, at least the people who are like the worker bees, their job primarily is to sort boxes. And it's the robots that are gathering these items and putting them into the boxes and things like that. And then for the human beings, like my sons who tried this, they didn't last very long. They said it was grueling and it was very difficult. And so, when they found better jobs, they move on to better jobs. But what was interesting was that in this job at the Amazon Distribution Center, there is a robot that will continuously kind of like check on the workers. And so it got to the point where we were joking with one of my sons that his boss was a robot. And that wasn't far from the truth, he said, because everything is measured. The speed with which you sling the boxes, how many boxes you can do in a minute, how many boxes you can do in an hour. It's all very precisely measured. And the robots and the artificial intelligence that goes in behind all this, which makes it so efficient. It just seemed to me that eventually it would get to the point where there would be no more need for human beings. Because if you can perfect the art of robotics, which I think is already long behind us, to be able to sling the boxes and you don't need a break and there is no maternity leave and you don't need days off and you don't get sick time and you don't need to have a coffee break or anything like that. I mean, you can just run these robots indefinitely and the error rate goes way down. And there are no injuries. I mean, it seems to me like a foregone conclusion that a business would say, well, yeah, why not do that? Which would further impinge upon the workforce for people who would like to have a job. And maybe because of the field that they're in, they wouldn't be able to do so. Just some thoughts and we'll see. So maybe 6 months from now, we'll revisit this topic, or a year from now, we'll revisit and see to what extent these predictions are coming true. 888-914-9149. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Please stay right there.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro tacos. Don't forget the rice and beans on the cada plato. I like to eat, homie, yo no estoy flaco. Yeah, I'm chubby, pero I'm still guapo. Uno, dos, tres.
Patrick Madrid is on
Taco Tuesday.
Coast to coast on Relevant Radio.
Taco Tuesday's my favorite day. That's the reason why I'm all away. Pero I don't care, homie, let them hate.
You gonna let robots make your taco?
Depends on how good they are. If it's a good taco, I'll eat it, even if a robot made it.
Yeah, true enough.
Hey, check this out. Happy Taco Tuesday, everybody. 888-914-9149. There's a guy's name is Dr. David Levy, L-E-V-Y, is a PhD in social robotics. I didn't know you could get a degree in social robotics. But he says in a book that he just recently came out with, he says that just as it is now accepted in most countries that you can marry people of the same sex, he said he's predicting that by 2050, so a little less than 30 years, that marrying, quote unquote, a robot will become accepted and legal. Now, at first glance, you may say that's absurd. That'll never that'll never happen. No way. That'll never happen. Well, that's what people said, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago about so-called same-sex marriage. And now it's the law. It's the law of the land. And you better like it. And you better bake that cake. So, I mean, if you think that it's too absurd, it could never happen, I think you should think again. And so, not that we're going to dwell on this topic. It's unsavory, if you ask me. But if you consider the trajectory that the country is on and currently how so many things that would have been considered unthinkable and were considered unthinkable in the not too distant past, which are now very much thinkable and even legal, why wouldn't the government at some point say, okay, yeah, sure, you want to marry a robot? No problem. Sign here. Because marriage, of course, now has been emptied of its meaning. It's been drained of its meaning. Its meaning, of course, as everybody has always understood for all of human history, is between a man and a woman. Now, what about polygamy, they'll say? But Patrick, what about King David and King Solomon and all the concubines? Yeah, I understand that. But the same basic paradigm still applied then, even though in some countries, some civilizations rather, having many wives is something that is done in some places. Nonetheless, it's still recognized that the unit of a man and a woman is what produces offspring. And any other combination doesn't produce offspring. It's just how it is, just the way it's the way the bodies work. So as we've talked about before, you have a complete digestive system. You have a complete nervous system. You have a complete circulatory system. You can go on down the list of the systems of the human body. But guess what? You only have half of a reproductive system. Isn't that interesting? Of all of us as human beings, we're all walking around with complete systems in our bodies except for one, and that is the reproductive system. You only have half of that, and it only works if you have the other half.
Get that in your spirit.
And without the other half, you don't have babies. So you're saying, where are you going with this? Well, here's where I'm going with this. Marriage was enshrined in law, it was recognized by law, was understood by people as being the union of a man and a woman. And we're not going to get into marriage and divorce and what about multiple marriages and things like that, but just the basic unit of a man and a woman, because it tended toward offspring. Now that the federal government has seen fit to redefine marriage, so it's no longer one man and one woman, it can now be one man and one man, or one woman and one woman. Okay, so the question becomes then, well, if there's nothing special about man or woman, if it's interchangeable, if marriage really, in fact, doesn't depend upon there being a man and a woman, but it could be two men or it could be two women, then what's so special about two? What's so special about that number? Why can't it be three men or five dudes and a chicken? Because then you get into the question, well, if the number, I mean, if the sex is not important, it can be two men or two women or a man and a woman if you choose, then what's to prevent the government from saying, you know what, this whole restriction to just two people, that doesn't make any sense. Let's open it up to 3 or 4 or 5. In that case, if the number of people doesn't really matter and you could legally, let's say, have 3 or 4 multiple people get married, why does it have to be people? Why not 5 dudes and a chicken?
Are you totally deranged?
No. But the country I live in is. That's for sure. So if it's not dependent, marriage speaking here, if it's not dependent upon a man and a woman, and it's eventually perhaps not going to depend upon the number of people involved, then I think eventually the next barrier to fall would be, why does it have to be people? In which case, then sure, marry your robot. If you and your robot never fight, and if your robot makes you laugh and you have wonderful warm memories together, why not marry your robot?
Come on, man.
You're laughing at me now. You may not be laughing 5 or 10 years from now. That's a prediction I hate to make. I really do, because talk about a nightmare world. But you know, things are getting weird and weirder by the minute. So buckle up, I would say. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Margaret in Chicago. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Just a follow-up comment on the discussion about people working, not working.
Yeah.
I looked up in 2 Thessalonians, chapter 3, beginning at verse 10. St. Paul says, even when we were with you, we gave you this command, if anyone will not work, let him not eat. For we hear that some of you are living as in idleness, mere busybodies, not doing any work. And he goes on a little, but it's kind of like, I think it is apropos, are there some people who can't work? I get that. I really do. And, whether there are no jobs they can do or whatever. But if you're just sitting around on the dole, I think it's not good for us to not work.
I agree.
I think God.
I actually did quote that very passage, and I'm glad that great minds think alike, because that's a very pointed way of addressing the topic from the scriptural standpoint. If you don't work, then you shouldn't eat. Obviously, that applies to people who can work, which is your point, right? Some people can't work. They're just unable to do so because of restrictions physically or mentally. So they're not in that category. But the vast majority of people who can work should work. It's good for them. It's not only good for society, but it's good for them as people to be productive. Imagine if Albert Einstein, or better, imagine if Thomas Edison had just slacked off and played Xbox, which he couldn't do, of course, because there was no electricity, which he had a hand in bringing to us. But imagine if people like Thomas Edison or Alexander Graham Bell, who invented the telephone, or some of these other significant people, to your point, Margaret, imagine if they had just sat on the couch playing whist or whatever the games were in those days, and they just never got around to making these breakthroughs that we all take for granted. What a impoverished life we would be living without them. We need
it. Horrible. Yeah. We do. We do. So anyway, thank you. Thank you for putting this topic out there.
You're welcome, Margaret. Thank you. I appreciate your phone call. Cyrus, try to imagine, just, I know it's a nightmare thought, but try to imagine if the guy who invented tacos just did not get off the couch and work and invent a taco. Can you imagine the nightmare world we'd be living in now without tacos?
Inconceivable.
I don't even like to think about it. Oh, I'm getting the chills. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Lawrence now in San Diego. Hi, Lawrence.
Oh, hello, Patrick Driz. Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I work for Amazon, and okay. I work as a delivery driver.
Is your boss a robot, by chance?
Yes, pretty much. The system organizes everything for my entire route for the whole day. And we always joke about how much it messes up. For instance, the other day, I delivered to a house in this farm area, and if I would have delivered it where the system wanted me to deliver to, I would have delivered it literally on a rock in the middle of nowhere. And there's other situations where you have to have just kind of the common sense of, like, I'm not going to put it there. And the system is always messing up on where to go and how to you know, reorient a route. And so
is it an internal, like, what's the word I want? Like proprietary Amazon in-house system, or do they have a system that's manufactured or built by another company that they use?
I am not sure, but they use an app that's called Amazon Flex, and you have to log into that, and then everything just kind of loads up. And so it's very effective, and I see where a lot of the human parts of it can kind of be freeing if it's not there. Mm-hmm. But just the fact that it always messes up, I am not confident. Well, most of us are not confident in the app 100%. We're like, it gets us into the area, and then we have to make a decision after that.
Do you wind up using like the map on your iPhone or your Android phone to supplement what the Amazon app is giving you?
Exactly. So like you have an access to Google Maps, and we often have to use that, which you can say is another robot. But the human aspect of it is just right at this moment is still very important, because we still have to correct where the system is.
So let's fast forward, Lawrence, 5 years. Do you think that given the improvements that will be made inevitably and the machine learning that will learn how to overcome and correct these deficiencies that you're seeing right now, do you think that you'll even see human drivers for deliveries for Amazon, or do you think it'll all be automated and it will be AI and robotics that will be delivering the packages at that point? What do you think will happen?
Delivery, no. I could see the collection of all the items and the packages and everything and put it into the bags that we grab to put in our vans and our trucks. I could see that being automated, but over time. But still, delivery, they're not going to put that much money into getting electric vehicles that can self-automate. I think the liability there is too high. Tesla's not even there yet. So that's going to be a very long time.
I hear what you're saying, but I feel like it's going to happen a lot sooner than you might realize. So,
I agree.
Maybe
I agree.
I'm wrong.
It might happen a lot sooner. Well, what I do know is that for sure, some people might actually be very happy with no humans coming to the door, because there are parts of San Diego that we deliver to where we know the humans live there because they don't like other humans, and so they rather just not go anywhere. They rather just have it delivered to them.
What about the drone thing? That was kind of really big a couple of years ago, where Jeff Bezos was going to have these gigantic blimps up in the sky with all the product, and then the drones would be coming and going and bringing it down. I haven't heard much about that lately. Is that still a thing with Amazon?
There are no drones in the station when we drive in to pick up all our stuff. But you know what? They are very detailed in all the data they accrued. So I'm pretty sure they're working really hard at getting to that point, because the human error in driving gets a lot of us to lose our jobs, because we don't drive perfectly. And if we don't drive perfectly long enough, we end up losing some of the work, even really good drivers who just mess up with.
Oh, you mean like if you brake too hard, or if you don't go the speed limit, or some other infraction, that's all measured by the black box on your delivery truck?
I've never worked anywhere where they use like four or five apps. And so they got like four or five apps you have to log into that collect data about what happened to your vehicle or how fast you're going.
And well, that's what I'm talking about. In other words, they have ways of measuring your on the road performance. And so I guess tell me if I'm right. If a driver has too many problems in his driving, or he doesn't, you know, drive at a certain level, then they'll cut him loose then, right?
Correct, yeah. And then if he still wants the delivery, he has to go somewhere else and deliver where they don't collect all that data, which is most of the people that drive, or the companies that hire drivers. In this case, the company that hired me is actually not Amazon. It's a company that's contracted out by Amazon. So they handle the personnel stuff. So we have our own app for some things, but yeah, we have to all log into the app to allow us to be calculated about where we go the entire day and how fast we go there.
Yeah, well, it's a brave new world, that's for sure. If I were you, Lawrence, I'd be looking over the horizon, and I'd be looking at, you know, what could you jump to from being a delivery driver. If I'm right and you're not right, and maybe it's the opposite, but if I am right, I foresee that your job will probably not exist, not for human beings, in the not too distant future. We'll see. In the meantime, though, stay safe on those roads. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
Thank you for your cooperation. Good night.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, real quick for your good to know file. I was pleased when I saw this. A third judge last week struck down the Biden administration's multi-billion dollar farm aid program that expressly excludes whites. Why did they strike it down? Because it's racist. It's racism posing as anti-racism. Amanda Prestigiacomo has this article in the Daily Wire. Following rulings against the aid program from judges in Florida and Wisconsin, a judge in Tennessee issued a preliminary injunction to halt the race-based program, siding instead with the white fourth-generation farmer, Robert Holman, according to the Washington Times, which said the U.S. District Court Judge S. Thomas Anderson of the Western District of Tennessee issued a preliminary injunction to stop the Agriculture Department from delivering race-based loan payments under Section 1005 of the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. The ruling in favor of fourth-generation farmer Robert Holman of Union City, Tennessee, came as the latest court defeat for the USDA as it seeks to pay off up to 120% of qualified federal loans for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers defined as Black American Indian, Alaskan Native, Hispanic or Asian, or Hawaiian Pacific Islander. The court found that the plaintiff, Holman, has shown a substantial likelihood that he will prevail on his claim that Section 1005 violates his right to equal protection under the law. That's the whole crux of this story. Forbes magazine, they pointed out that the Biden-signed American Rescue Plan, quote, includes a $4 billion package of debt relief payments for farmers categorized as socially disadvantaged by the United States Department of Agriculture, primarily those ethnicities that I just mentioned, but whites are conspicuously excluded, no matter what their economic circumstances may be. So if you are white as a farmer and you're doing okay, you're excluded. If you are white and you're dirt poor and you're not even making it, you're excluded. So it has nothing to do with people in general who are disadvantaged. It has to do with your skin color. So U.S. District Judge Marcia Morales Howard, who most recently is the one who overturned this attempt on the Biden administration's part, said Congress must also heed its obligation to do away with governmentally imposed discrimination based on race. She says it appears that in adopting Section 1005 strict race-based remedy, Congress moved with great speed to address the history of discrimination, but it did not move with great care. And she's absolutely right. A federal judge in Wisconsin also ordered a temporary halt to the program. And it's because it's racist. I mean, there's no other word for it. You're identifying a group of people by their skin color and saying, sorry, you don't get to participate. Sorry, you know, we're going to help people, but not you. Why? Because of the color of your skin. That's racism. And racism is wrong, no matter the skin color or the political party of anybody who's perpetrating it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Andrew now in San Diego. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Patrick. Glad to hear from you again. So I was having a great conversation on YouTube comments, you know, the best place to have fruitful conversation. Mm-hmm. And someone mentioned an old quote, Ipsum esse subsistens. I was asking, what is God in your opinion? Like, give me some description of what you mean. And they said this, and I was wondering what it meant.
Esse subsistens? Yeah. Well, ipsum esse subsistens. Yeah. Okay, that phrase is from St. Thomas Aquinas, and it's a way to translate it would be that God is his own existence. So you and I have existence because we're brought into existence. So we participate in God's existence by him bringing us into existence, creating us. But God is not created by anything or anyone. He is from all eternity, always existent. And so one of his attributes is existence itself. So that's what that phrase means, that God is existence. He himself is existence. Does that help?
Okay, so the foundation of existence is on his back. He's Atlas.
Well, I don't know if I'd put it that way. But yeah, anything that exists, exists because God always existed and is the source of all existence. So, for example, in Exodus chapter 3, when God appears to Moses in the form of a burning bush and Moses asks him his name, it's difficult to render into English because it's a very odd phraseology. But in English, we say, I am who am, or I am that I am, is another way it's translated. And this is a way to try to get the gist of what God was saying to Moses, meaning I am existence itself. So yeah, that's what that means. I'm glad I could be of service, Andrew. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Joshua now in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning, Patrick. I have a harebrained idea that mm-hmm. to counter the CRT, critical race theory, okay. And the question if I have a chance afterwards, but my idea was a program called CCT instead of CRT, which is Crucial Christian Truth.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a harebrained idea, so just get it out there.
So what is Crucial Christian Truth comprised of?
Instead of critical, it's crucial. And instead of a theory, it's truth. Just like a CCD class. Mm-hmm. Or a government program, I don't know, something that will, you know, go out and just spread the faith, I guess, you know.
Well, we have plenty of opportunities to do that. So I encourage you to go about that. I don't think you'll have much luck convincing the Biden administration to sign off on that. But what the heck? If you get a chance to meet with El Presidente, maybe you could bring that up and see what he says. He is a quote-unquote devout Catholic, after all. So who knows? Maybe he will take you up on that.
Yeah, he might hear me if I call him up and just chat with him a little bit, as a fellow Catholic.
Come on, man.
Tell him Patrick Madrid sent you. Okay, so you said you had a follow-up question. What's that?
Yes, a while back you had a question. You were talking about somebody who lost their parent. You either have a choice to go on with life or else just stay back and just mourn the rest of your life. And I lost my mom in 2019, and I'm faced with that now because I don't have a wife, I don't have kids, and, you know, I don't have really much to live for. And I was wondering what your advice would be for me, you know.
Well,
because it's kind of hard to let go, you know. I'm 52.
Okay. So you never married, therefore you never had any kids. Is that right?
I got married, but it was an old, so I was never really married. And I had a miscarriage a long time ago, so okay. My girlfriend.
So no surviving children, and you're no longer married. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, obviously, that would be difficult, especially for someone who wants to be with a wife and family. So it seems that that's the cross that you're carrying right now. But there's so much to live for. I mean, live for God. So live for eternity. Remember that God loves you and he wants you to be happy, and he created you so that you could know him, love him, and serve him in this life and be happy with him in the life to come. So even if it turns out that you won't have a wife and children, it seems probably pretty likely that you won't, but if that's the way things turn out, maybe God has many more years to give you, and you can make those productive years living for him, serving others, you know, building your treasure in heaven, as Jesus talks about it, laying up that treasure in heaven. There's a lot to live for, and there's a lot of good that you can do for people in the meantime, whenever it is that God calls you. Wouldn't it be great if at the end of your life, Joshua, and you're at your exit interview, and God says to you, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been trustworthy over a little bit. Now enter into the joy of your master, because you recognized that you have so much to live for, and you made the best use of your time. Have you considered religious life? Have you considered maybe spending your life in prayer and contemplation? That's a beautiful way to spend one's life. And there are religious orders that consider men of your age and would be willing to take in candidates who might be very effective as religious brothers. You know, that's another possibility. And you would be in a great position to consider that because you don't have a wife and children to worry about. So you're unencumbered. And that could be a way to not only be productive and help the religious community, but also prepare yourself well through prayer and contemplation before the time comes to go to heaven. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I talked to a priest about that, about being a priest one time, and he said that because of my, you know, past abuse and the lack of education, the most I could be was a lay brother. Mm-hmm. And well, which wouldn't be bad, I guess. That's a good idea, you know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, let's put it this way. So I know you're in Albuquerque. You're, I believe, in the western province of the Dominican Order. The Dominican Fathers, they have what are called cooperator brothers, and those are brothers who take vows, and they live in community, and you would, if you saw one of the cooperator brothers, he would look just like one of the friars who are ordained a priest, but they don't pursue the path of the priesthood. They pursue a path of service. They help in parishes, and it's a beautiful life for those who are called to it. So the Dominicans might be a group to look into and just find out. But I do know that there are other religious orders who do accept late vocations and would be quite happy to talk to you.
Late priesthood vocations?
Well, there are some, but I think you pointed out a few possible impediments to pursuing the priesthood. Now, you don't have to give me any more information because this is radio, but in your discernment process, you can ask those questions, and there are dioceses in need of additional vocations. It would be difficult to pursue the studies at your age now at 52. Doesn't mean you couldn't do it. I mean, you could do it, I suppose, but it might require a lot of additional effort that you may not feel the energy to do. But that's something to explore if you want to talk to the vocations director in your diocese. You're in the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. But maybe just touch base with the Dominican friars and ask them about their cooperator, the lay brother role that they have in their communities. And perhaps if you're talking with them, they can give you some other suggestions. But anyway, I'm not trying to herd you in that direction, but just offer you something to consider. You have so much to live for, and hopefully you'll have quite a few years to serve out your mission here in this life and then be happy with God forever in the life to come. And when we're both in heaven, Joshua, let's get together and compare notes, shall we? Thanks for the call. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Margaret in Chicago. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I was wondering what you think about the church splitting. It seems that the church has a progressive side, and they are pandering towards society and society's morals. Instead of trying to save souls, they're trying to save the earth, they're trying to save material things, they're trying to pander to politicians. And I see the church splitting, and what worries.
Okay, there we go, Margaret. Something happened with your audio, but you're back now. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I'm not sure what. If the church splits, where do I go? Because I'm more conservative. I feel that the church is becoming progressive. They're not worried about saving my soul. They're worried about pandering to the left. They're worried about pandering to society today and their lack of morals. And I feel like if the church eventually does split, where would I go? Because I know we have to stay with the Catholic faith, and it would make it no different than the Reformation. I mean, these breakoffs of the Catholic Church. But I feel like the church is going in the wrong direction. They're pandering.
Well, okay. I understand what you're saying, but let me offer you a different way to look at this. Remember that the church, Jesus promised, will never be overcome, not even by the gates of hell, he said in Matthew 16. Matthew 28, he says, "Behold, I'm with you always, even until the end of the world." And then, of course, you know the story of how the apostles one day were out on the Sea of Galilee fishing, and a huge storm came up, and they thought they were going to die. And these, some of these guys were seasoned fishermen, so they knew all about storms. And this apparently was worse than anything they'd ever seen. And they were convinced that they were about to drown. And Jesus, wouldn't you know, was asleep in the back of the boat. And they woke him up and said, Lord, don't you care that we're about to die here? And of course, he calms the waves and everything. And then he says, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? So my advice would be ponder those passages. Number one, about the permanence of the church. It will never go under. And Jesus promises that there will be times where it may get really grim. But as long as you're with him, you need not fear. So there have been schisms in the church before. The Arian heresy, it sundered the church. And in fact, the majority of bishops went into heresy. Thankfully, there were people like St. Athanasius and others who helped bring things back on track, and the lay people who were faithful. But they survived. I'm thinking about the so-called Reformation in England, where all of the bishops of England, except for one, went into heresy. And the church remained. Bishop and the Fisher. People who's... That was Bishop Fisher, John Fisher. And he lost his head for his trouble. If you don't mind holding, Margaret, I'll offer you a few other thoughts. I want to encourage you. So stay there and I'll be right back. Hour 3 is about to start. I'll be right back right after this.